This is Interpreting Wine podcast founder and host Lawrence Francis welcoming you to my first ever deep dive into a single producer with Waterford Distillery of Ireland. This is the type of series I've been wanting to make ever since starting the podcast back in 2017, giving as it does unrivaled access for you, the listener, to all levels of the company, from strategy and history right the way through every single production detail. I think you'll agree Waterford are doing something very special, and I'd highly recommend subscribing to the podcast so that you're alerted whenever new episodes go live. Today's episode of the Waterford Distillery Special features the man with the best job at Waterford, head distiller Ned Gahan. Continuing our low and slow journey through the production process at Waterford, we hear Ned's origin story and transition into his current role. He then takes us step by step through the process, a distillation deep dive. He talks double distillation, the blending process. We do a tasting practical. I get to put together my own special Interpreting Wine whiskey blend, and he talks Waterford legacy. Enjoy.
So my name is Ned Gahan. I'm the head distiller at Waterford Distillery here. I started here in January 15 when the distillery opened, and previously I had worked on the site here for Diageo and Guinness for 15 years. So good bit of experience in brewing and how to make beer, and this is my first distilling job. So when I started, I actually came and had a quick chat with Mark, and if you know Mark, it's not a quick chat. It gets dragged out a bit, but very interesting, and you want to work for Mark. So went out after having talked to Mark and got a phone call, say, would you like to come along and start working? So I said yes, so there was no discussion on money, job or whatever. So when I came in initially, it was to just renovate the site here. And after a while, Mark said to me, would you like to be the head distiller? I said, of course I would. It sounds as simple and was as simple as that. Now, Mark did probably take a punt on me not having had distillery experience before. But he wanted someone who knew how to distill and would know the practical side of brewing as well. So he wanted a hands-on distiller rather than someone who was going to be out as a face of the brand talking and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was delighted. Spent a bit of time then in Scotland and having a look around and doing a bit of research and basically just finding my own feet with the distillery and stuff. And I suppose starting up, we didn't have any product, so it was a chance to kind of forge our own spirit. And the stills we have and the way we run the stills, very low, very slow, it's all driven by quality, lends the spirit to being a light, elegant, floral spirit. So yes, that's kind of the way I started. So we started distilling, I suppose, officially the farms in 2016. We did a trial run on the 9th of December 2015. So roughly a year and 4 days after Mark had bought the site, we were up and running with the stills. So then in 2016, we started doing our single farm distillations. So to date, we've done over 70 farms, 72 or 3 farms, I think. And it's every week is interesting because we have different farms coming through.
What I might just ask you to do, if that's okay, is just, I guess, take us through, you know, with the distillation hat on, you know, talk us through that process of production here, you know, right the way through from the farmer, you know, who you've already said, you know, you're sort of on first name terms with, and their names are on the batches and the bottles that we're sitting in front of here. Yeah, I want to hear that, you know, from the distiller's mouth, you know, what is the process of what takes place here at Waterford Distillery?
Yeah, we do talk about the farmer. So when we're doing a farmer this week, we are doing, say, Philly O'Brien. So we do it in discrete batches. So it starts at the field, basically. So terroir is the big concept that everyone is probably talking about, but also traceability and transparency are the other key elements. So what we would do is we would actually, in partnership with Minch Malt and Dalton's, we would go out and collect the grain. Normally the grain is bought in by the farmer. So to ensure traceability and transparency, we will actually go out and collect the grain. It's bought in then to Dalton's in Kilkenny. It's dried and stored separately in individual bays in a storage unit called the Cathedral that Mark had built with Dalton's. So from there then it's lays dormant until it starts to wake up. And when it's due to be malted, then it's transported to Athy, where Minch Malt malted in individual farms again, and it comes down to us then and is stored here in individual bay, in individual silos. So then Neil takes over and he does the brewing process. So small tweaks have to happen because it's a different farm, you have different temperature points in the brewing. And when it's finished brewing then, and it's after fermenting, it starts being sent up to the stills. And I suppose we are in Ireland, and normally people talk about triple distillation, but we actually double distill. In Ireland, you can double or triple distill in the technical file, and we can also spell the whiskey with or without an E. So we're choosing not to use E in our whiskey. There's a couple of reasons for that, maybe. So when we distill it, then we would have a volume of roughly around 85,000 litres in each washback, which is a good size. Our stills are from Inverleven. Ex-Inverleven stills were built in 1972. Mark liberated them from Inverleven and brought them to Bruichladdich with the intention of using them there, but they were never actually used. They were stored in Bruichladdich, so when Mark left Bruichladdich, he actually brought them with him. So Foresight's renovated the stills. That enabled us to get up and going just over a year, because we didn't have to wait for new stills to be built. At the time, McCallum were doing their project, so there was a three-year waiting list from Foresight. So we were able to renovate the stills and get going. So they were used on and off for about 19 years, so they had been used sparingly enough. So what we would do is we would send a charge is a volume of wash up at around 17,000 litres up to our wash still, and we would boil it once, obviously. But we boil our stills or use our stills very slowly, so we keep under roughly around 1,000 litres an hour in a wash still. After that, then it's the heads and the tails of the previous spirit still and the wash still are mixed together to make the next charge for our spirit still. So we would roughly have a charge of about 10,500 litres at about 26% alcohol. So that will go into the spirit still, and again, we boil that very slowly. So we would be on heads for about, our four shots for about 30 minutes, and we would run in around 250 or 300 litres an hour, very, very slow. The reason we do that is we want to ensure that we're getting the best quality spirit. So we would, if you look at it in terms of a fraction, and time is your length, the quicker you go, the more the fractions blend into one another. So it's hard to distinguish a cut point, maybe. We also do our cuts by hand. So the plant here is highly automated. The cut at the start of the spirit, the heads, at the four shots, and the tails are all done by the distiller. And also the steam is semi-automated. So the steam will come on a program first, and then we can adjust it according to the flow. So when we get the point where we want to make the cut at the start, the distiller will move the handle on the safe and start collecting the spirit. We up the steam slightly, but we still don't go over 500 litres an hour. When we initially did it, Foresight's were here commissioning, and they ran on spirit around 13 or 1400 litres an hour, and they said we were mad for running so slow. But the reason we run slowly is we want to promote a light, elegant spirit. So by running low and slow, as we call it, your lighter spirits will get pushed up the neck and turned back into liquid through the condenser. Your heavier spirits will, heavier vapors will go up so high and fall back down. Our neck is also, in distilling terms, is long enough. So that helps us promote a light, elegant spirit. And we get fruitiness then from the length of time that Neil has the wash in the washbacks. So I suppose basically we would roughly run on spirit for maybe 5 hours. So our full spirit still run is in around 9.5 hours. And I think on the basis of design on the initial one was probably 7.5 hours. So for us, it's about quality. It's not about quantity. We don't want to pump liquid out. We want to produce the best quality spirit we can. And given that the farmers put in such an effort, and we want to treat it with the respect that everyone else is treating it with as well.
So I think for me, one of the really interesting things that I've picked up here today is that essentially the process has been standardized right the way across the board. And really what's changing is what's coming in from the farmer. You know, it's their terroir, their variety of grain. It's the differences are really happening down there. And essentially all of the decisions that have been made here, you know, a lot of which you've sort of alluded to there, you know, in terms of what that's sort of giving you. I guess one that it would be helpful, I think, for me just to talk a bit about would be the double distillation. You know, you said you had the choice to make essentially between double or triple. Could you just talk a bit about, you know, what were some of the factors behind choosing the double rather than the triple?
Well, I suppose the main factor was Mark said we were double distilling. it's probably as simple as that, really. You know, I suppose there's a big debate about double distillation and triple distillation, but each distillery runs their stills differently. So you can't compare apples with apples, because your distillery might be triple distillation but run your stills totally different than mine, which is a triple distillation. So speed and charge volumes, and they all come into it. So I don't think for us it was triple distilled or double distilled is better or worse. I think there was two stills available. Mark had come from the obviously the Scottish side, which was double distillation. But when he looked at it, he said, you know, having talked to him, you know, if we run these stills very slowly, that will give us what we need. The other thing then as well is we all always feel a cask strength. So if we produce, so each farm, we would roughly have 20, well, we do have 20 still runs. So after 10 still runs, half the farm, we tankered out to Ballygarren and we fill it cask strength. So if we were going to triple distill, we would be adding water, and we didn't want that either. We want to just, you know, so we would fill cask at 70, 71, 72%, whatever it came out. So I think also if we were triple distillation, it would be a higher ABV. We'd have to add water. So that might have been a factor as well, but it's as simple as Mark said, we're double distilling. So it wasn't a debate. It wasn't a whole, you know, sit down about the philosophy of double or triple distilling, just what was available and stuff. So for me to say double distilling or triple distilling is better or worse, I'd have to taste the new makes, really, to be fair. Some people love the triple distillation stuff. They say it gives it a little bit more smoothness and that. But, you know, I think what I would always say to people is, do you like coffee? And you do. Yeah. You're nodding here. And I don't. I don't like coffee at all. So everyone's taste is different. So just because you like something doesn't mean that it's not nice. It's just that you appreciate that flavors more. And it's the same with whiskey. Like what we're doing, we believe, is the way we want to do it. But that's not to say that someone else's whiskey is not as nice or they're not doing the right thing. This is the philosophy we have, and this is what we're working with. And I'm not dodging the question. It's just that to be able to compare apples with apples, you need to taste the apples. as part of my role as head distiller, I'm also involved in buying the casks. So the four types of casks we would buy are American First Fill, which are American Standard barrels from bourbon, American Virgin casks, so American oak never used, French premium casks, so we buy good casks, fairly young, so they might be from Chateau Lafite or Moton & Rothschild, Chateau Le Pape. They might have had two wines in them, so they're really, really young. And the other is what we call VDN, or Vin du Naturel, so our sweet fortified wines, Sherry, Port, Marsala, Rivesal, Sauter, and those type of casks. And those are the basis of each farm. So when we're filling a farm, we will fill 50% American First Fill, 20% American Virgin, 15 VDN, and 15 French. And also then I'm looking after the blending, or putting the bottles together, which is very interesting as well, because you know, I know some of your listeners are probably into food and chefs and stuff, and the way I'd like to explain it is, if with just generic barley, you go to the cupboard and you have one bottle, and probably the way we're doing it, you go to the one cupboard and you have an infinity amount of bottles that you can basically put together in, you know, regional, variety, vintage, cask type. So it's a bit mind-blowing, actually, the amount of casks that we put together.
For context, seeing as we're sat here in the tasting room and I've literally just, you know, walked around the plant and, you know, seen that, you know, there's a lot of automation here, having just learned that there's 17 people working here, I kind of imagine that there may be sort of loads more people working here. So there's obviously then a lot of automation in a lot of the processes that are taking place that allow the plant to run 24/7. It's interesting then, sitting here and seeing all of these samples here in front of us. I think before we, you know, we get into trying something, could you talk a little bit about this part of the process versus all the other parts? You know, is there still an element of automation at this part? Is there still an element of testing, or have we now passed through the stage of the process where everything is now really about the human? It's about the nose, it's about the look, it's about the taste, and actually now it's just down to individual opinion.
Very, very much so, I suppose. You know, when Diageo are here and they spent $40 million on the plant, what it gives us is it gives us a chance to have consistency, so that the barley shines through from the spirit. And then when it goes into the cask, I suppose, just to mention the casks, a lot of people say that 50 or 60 or 70% of a flavor of whiskey comes from a cask. And what I'd like to say is it's 100% of your spirit is influenced by 100% of your cask. So if you have a bad cask or bad whiskey, you're not necessarily going to get good whiskey. So what we do is we buy the best casks, because obviously, as I said, we're not adding E150 or caramel, so we're depending on the casks for color and flavor. But when it gets into the tasting room here, then yeah, most definitely standardization goes out the window, and we're looking at, yeah, what's nice. So I might have a spirit that we distilled in 2016 that I might have been, you know, really hopeful of, and it gets together with some good casks, and you're going, this is on its way to being a good whiskey. And then something else, you taste something else which didn't leave a huge impression back in 2016, and you're going, wow, this is serious, like. So every bottle that we have here, and we have lots of bottles, as you can see, is a component that we may use, we may not use. And we may use several percentages of American First Fill or whatever. So we can play around with it. It's down to what we want to look at. And Mark has stated he wants the most complex whiskey in the world. He's used other language, which we won't go into now. He might with yourself, but basically he wants the consumer, the person who's tasting and smelling it, to have an experience where you're going, yeah, wasn't expecting that. And there's, like, Milfoy's is another one where there's layers and layers and layers and layers and layers. So basically it's just about smelling bottles, tasting bottles, seeing what works well. But what I tend to do at the moment is I get casks from a farm, and I will put them together in a certain percentage of the four cask types, and I will taste them across one another, so that I'm tasting more or less apples with apples. Obviously, the spirit is their different points. So when we put the new make from each farm into a cask, we have a different starting point. And the other thing you must remember too is a cask is an individual breathing, living thing. As the angel share comes out, it also takes in the influence from the outside. And where we have the warehouse in Ballygarren is about a quarter mile from the sea, and some of that marine influence will get into that. And you will have a tree that could give you two different casks from the same tree. So there's probably a little bit of terroir going on with the tree as well. Like, so just because one cask tastes amazing, you can't assume that the next cask is going to taste the exact same. And we've seen that with casks we've got that are filled on the same day from the same farm, and there's subtle differences.
So, yeah, being as we are, yeah, sat here in your office with all these bottles in front of us, I think it's only fair that we, yeah, try something. We're going to, yeah, just have a, I guess, a conversation here, and you're going to, you know, show us, give us a bit of an insight into what you do, and, you know, use me as your guinea pig for, sort of a guided tasting here.
So what we have here, Lawrence, is we have four new makes, and a new make is the spirit that comes off the still. So it's white, and the strength of it is all around 71.5%. I think in America they call it white dog. So it's that spirit that comes off the still. So we have four bottles here, and they're all Olympus variety, which is the same variety. So the first one you can have a nose of is Martin Foley. Martin is from Wexford, and it was done on the 8th of April 2019. So we've had Martin Foley for most of the years here. Michael Kinsey is a new farmer, and he is, I think he's from Wexford as well, and his is 71.41 at the moment. So this would have been filled into the cask. So these would have been close enough to another geographically. The other one then is Pat Booth. And interestingly, Pat is an organic farmer. So he wouldn't use artificial fertilizers and that. So, you know, there'd be a difference there just because of the way the farming is done. And the last one then is Mark Brown, and he's from Wexford again. So the three conventional farmers are from the same geographical area, so there'll be subtle differences with them. And I don't know if you're picking up differences in that, but
I got to say, I think first off, this is great, because you know, while we're here with all of the different samples that have sometimes gone through different aging in different casks and then have been blended here, we're actually then here, we're like stripping all of that away, aren't we? We're getting right back to the total essence of that. And I gotta say, you know, I haven't tried anything yet, so I'm not been influenced, but to me there's a real difference in the aromas here. It's like, especially the first one is almost smelling like coconutty. It's smelling almost like really sweet. And then like the last three, kind of all three of them are kind of bringing down the volume quite a bit, but and definitely the organic grow there, Pat Booth, is then there's almost like there's a different quality though, even though saying he's next to Michael Kinsella, there's more of a sort of an earthiness coming out I'm finding there in his one. And similarly then in the last sample, then there's just, I don't know really how to describe it, there's like a sort of more of a fruitiness, there's more of, but all sort of, you know, quite approachable. Even say the last one even reminds me a little bit of grape, actually. It's there's a real like variation that's coming through from all four. And presumably then, because we've taken it right back, we've taken away all of those other influences, the only influence here, that thing that we're smelling differently, is going to be from the barley.
So 100% the barley is the difference. Our spirit, we would like to think, is very approachable on the nose. It there's no offensive nature to it at all. When you mentioned Martin Foley, actually, Martin is very interesting where his farm is, because he is down in Wexford, right on the coast, and there's a Hook Lighthouse. So his fields surround Hook Lighthouse. So if you throw your leg over the ditch, you're in the sea. So this would be different because it has that minerality from the sea, and that there's also a little bit of saltiness in it, I think. So they are all different. And the other thing as well is we would have people in here and who are well-versed in, you know, describing whiskey and spirit and stuff. But for people who are not, once they can smell a difference, that's the thing. They don't have to be able to verbalise it. Once they can smell a difference, that's the thing. Now, these are subtle differences. I can give you other farms from different geographical areas, but we could be here all day. So what we would be looking for here is we also take samples of every run that we do. So what we have here is the combination of half the farm. So it gives you a good indication of what the farm is like, because each run can be slightly different. We put them together and we tanker out to Ballygarren. So this is a true representation of the farm itself. And again, all strong 71 plus alcohol, but you don't get that hit of alcohol off it. It's actually, we find it quite inviting, the new make.
Bring this then back into, you know, your workflow, and, you know, what is the value that you get from sampling each of these different new makes at this stage before they've gone into any wood or any aging regime?
So I suppose the main reason is quality. So we would taste every run just to make sure that it's okay, because from time to time things may happen. Touch wood, luckily enough, we haven't had that happen. But the main reason, the first reason, is quality. The second reason then is to taste, to make a few notes on it, and just see how nice it is, how different it is, what components are there. Because I suppose with all this, it's all tying back. So between Neil and Grace and myself, it's going back to terroir. So the more information we can have on it, we can go back to it. So the whole piece, like last year for the farmers, was a very difficult year for sowing barley. We had a very late sowing, and we had drought in the summer. So those conditions may never be replicated again. But the barley that gives us the spirit of that, we have flavours and we have notes and stuff that we can tie back to. So if we have a farm that we've used over the 5 years, which we have a few, we can see, is there a line, a similar note coming from that farm? And there may not be, because he may move barley from this field to another field. He may have the same variety 1 year after another. But just the terroir in that field, the microclimate, the way the field undulates, if there's trees blocking frost or sun, will have an impact on that. So we can go back and we can see in a couple of years' time how that impacted the flavours. So it's building up a database as well, just to see, is there a flavour that comes from, say, Martin Foley's farm? Is there a flavour that's coming from a particular field? Is there, you know, does a field or a landscape and a particular variety work well together? So it's basically building up information, but primarily it's to make sure that what we put in the cask is quality.
And yeah, and I think, you know, while we've got all these new makes here, you know, and you've gone to the trouble of pouring them out, and we've spoken about the smell and the differentiation, I think it's worth having a taste as well. So I've literally just tried the first batch here from, I can see, Martin Foley. Sampled 8th of the 4th, 2019. And even though it's like 71%, it's got like a really, I'm still tasting it now, it's got a really nice finish. It's got like a you know, a real breadth of flavor as well. And, you know, I'm guessing though, again, this is all about quality. These are not finished products, are they? This is about you and the team here being able to trace and to track the evolution, really, of the spirits.
Yeah, exactly. But I suppose what we found is our spirit, our new make, or White Dog in America or whatever it is, is very drinkable. Even though, you know, Martin Foley is 71.29%, you're not tasting that really strong alcohol. And all our new makes on the nose and taste, they're slightly different. What you're nosing, you're not really expecting the taste that you get then. And when you get the taste, it is a drink in itself, as I said. It's very barley forward, which sounds stupid, but it is very barley forward. You can taste the earth and the barley. And then you have, what we'd find is some are floral and fruity. Others have a kind of a clove sweet. And some then are very white peppery on your tongue. So there's a huge variation in the mouth. We have very good oils, and you feel that when you're drinking it, and it stays in your mouth for a good while. And we have a very nice finish. I suppose one of the things that we look for as well is our cut at the very start. We have to be fairly meticulous with it, because we could leave it the spirit go a little bit further, and just to ensure that you're not collecting the very start, that four shots, that bit that gives you your headache and stuff. But at your mouthfeel comes at the start of your distillation. So if we don't capture that, we're going to lose mouthfeel here. You lose mouthfeel in the whiskey. So it's very important that that's monitored closely. The distillers keep a very close eye on that. So it's not just a case of, oh, we'll leave it go a minute or two longer. We need to capture as much of that as possible. So running slowly helps us do that as well.
So Ned, you very kindly set up another sort of tasting flight here for us. So what you've got here are the sort of is the new make from Edward Harper now, and then you've got four other bottles that have been aged in various casks. So I think I'll ask you to talk the listeners through what we've got set up in front of us, and then I think also just to then relate that back to the process. You know, what is the use of this? How is this helping you to have this set up and to have really all of this information and traceability on this particular producer?
So I suppose, yes, we've Edward Harper. So this is from 2016 distillation, but it's actually 2015 variety, and the variety is Overture. So you can see on the bottle itself, I suppose, you can't see it, but you know, we have, what we have is we have the grower number, we have the location, the GPS location, we have where the farm is, we have the variety, we have soil type, we have the ABV, and that. So it gives us all the information on the front then. It tells us when the sample was taken and Edward Harper. So what we have then is this spirit, this new make spirit, was put into four cask types: American first fill, ex bourbon casks, American Virgin, French Premium, and our VDN. And you can't see, but the colours are so different. So what that does then is, this is not yet whiskey. It's about 18 days short of our 3 years. So I've poured out the different samples. But also what I've done is I have a bottle put together of the four cask types at different percentages, and broken down to about 91% alcohol. Okay, so if we start with the American first fill, so I suppose 98% of distilleries would use American first fill, and the color is very light hue. We are depending on casks for our colour. Again, we won't be using caramel as the additive, so we're depending on the casks for the colour. So by using the four different types of casks, we get various colours. The new American cask obviously will give us a very deep colour, but also putting in the alcohol at 71% in around that will extract an awful lot from the wood as well. So we're extracting a lot of the properties of the wood. So you'll find on the American, you'll find a lot more creme brulee, vanilla, so really heavy in that. But if we didn't have the French and the VDN to balance that out, it would be very sweet whiskey. So we're looking at the French and the VDN just to bring a different aspect to the whiskey. So you're smelling the French one at the moment, and it's actually a lovely pink color. Mm-hmm. And you're probably smelling some of those deep red fruits that are there. I'm not telling you what you're smelling, but you know, this is what we're kind of looking for. So the same spirit, if you were to nose that same spirit, you can, well, I think you can pick up parts of the spirit through all the casks. So that we're looking for. We're looking to see that the spirit is coming through, but also that the cask then is lending itself to the spirit. So the VDN one then as well is a little bit, probably color-wise, is a little bit between the American First and probably the American New, but it's probably a bit more like the American Forceville. And that gives you a dryness or a dry sweetness to it. That's what we're looking for. So we're using these Reevesal casks and Madeira and Massal and all those. And then at the end, we have the four casks put together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not put together in a specific percentage, but the percentage is 35% American, 20% American New, 25% French, and 20% VDN. And what I would do then is I would do a taste comparison across the farms. Mm-hmm. So I could taste Edward Harper against Philly O'Brien, against Seamus Duggan, and the same percentage, and see how they taste against each other. And after that, then I get to play around, and you can put stuff together on your nose and taste what you like. Obviously, you keep a record of it then, because the last thing you want to do is make something that's really nice and not know what percentage you have.
And that's it. It's just that meticulous attention to detail right the way through. And yeah, you're right. I'm sure it has to carry on into the tasting component as well. And it's really interesting now, seeing all the six glasses lined up in front of me. You've got the new make there, which is almost clear. It's like a totally clear liquid. And then the four essentially aged in the four different barrels there, they to me, they're actually reminding me of different wines. I mean, it's interesting you talking about, you know, the fact that you're not using colouring here. So the American First Fill and the VDN, they're reminding me of what might be quite sort of rich white wines. The American New is actually reminding me of what might be a sort of an orange wine or something like with some skin contact. It's much deeper. And then the French Premium is reminding me of a rosé. So it's really interesting. And I just think this visual here is showing me more than anything. I wouldn't normally expect whiskies, you know, at any stage of their development to remind me color-wise of wines. I would always expect the wines to be much clearer, much brighter, but it's just super interesting to me that you've got each component is actually reminding me of a wine style.
Showing, and I suppose the good thing about this is every farm gets this treatment. It's not just Edward Harper, it's every farm. Yeah. So we get to taste comparisons, American First Fills against each other, American News against each other, French and VDN obviously against each other. So we can pick up a French one and go, oh, that reminds me of a really good Chateau Lafite, or because it was in a Chateau Lafite cask. Mm. Or we have VDN casks here, and we have Sherry, Port, Sauternes, and you can taste that and you can get those influences. But for us, the starting point is the new make. Yeah. And the cask then develops that. And I suppose what I'd like you to do is there's an empty glass here. Okay. You can put something together yourself. So you can do your own cuvée on the farm. And again, these are all cask strengths, so they're about 68%. So the handiest thing to do is just nose and put them together and see, and then you can change around.
Sure. Okay, no, I love it. So yeah, no pressure here on putting together a blend. But yeah, it's really interesting to taste the kind of premix that you've got here with the 35% American, 20% American New, 25% French, and 20% VDN. Because I'm tasting it, I'm liking it, but I feel like there's maybe different components could be turned up a little bit. I feel like actually. I want to, yeah, it's interesting. I feel like I do want to turn up the American New a little bit, just give a little bit more, yeah, woody sort of characteristic coming through. And then, yeah, maybe Yeah, why not the VDN as well? I think those are probably the two that I'd want to turn up a bit. So let's give that a little try and see how it comes out. Okay, so we've settled on the final mix now. So we've gone now American 25%, American New 35%, French is at 15%, and the VDN is at 25%. So yeah, I'm gonna now get the.
No, get the first.
Okay, cool.
I hold it if you want.
So I'm going to give this a quick smell first before I pass it back to Ned, and let's see. It's the color is kind of pretty good. I think it's that kind of rich orangey wine. I want to say kind of, you know, very very sort of deep color. You can still of course see through the glass, but it's a lot deeper than most of these that we've got here. Well, that's the final blend. I think it feels like it's getting in the right direction. I feel like maybe I might have been a bit over generous with the new there. I might have turned that one up, and it feels like that's an important balance to keep going, is between the American and the new, so you don't get too many woody aromas.
Yep. So that is the thing. The American New packs a punch, and it can overpower.
Yeah.
It can overpower. So for me, it's real. The American New is the real dominant one there. So what do? You get your bottle, and you tweak. Mm-hmm. So if you get, I'd suggest just get the French, and throw a bit of French into it.
Sure.
We won't measure.
Okay.
We measured the first one, so yeah. I'd say, give it a swirl, see what you think. This is 100% not scientific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's already smelling bad.
Yeah.
Tasting better as well.
Yeah. So it is literally a fine balance.
Yeah.
Between the casks, and it's to find the balance. And again, like I mentioned before, I don't like coffee. You do, so we taste different things.
Yeah, that's way better.
So I suppose what we've kind of seen here is the proportions that I put together were just to taste across the farm.
Yeah.
You then up the American Virgin, dropped the French slightly, but it became very wood dominant, very sweet. Mm. And then when you added the French, it changed it again. Now, it was only a drop, but it changed it. Mm-hmm. But it became very zingy, I felt then. It was very explosive in the mouth nearly. And some people will love it and some people won't. So it's what people will like, what I'll like. When people come in to taste in the tasting room here, what advice they give. At the end of the day, there's no right and wrong. We don't have a whiskey yet. We're developing. We have, like you see behind us, this is only, I think it's only 15 farms, and there's 100 and something bottles there. So when we go to do our first cuvée in a few years' time, we will have a multitude of casks and farms to look at. So that's slightly daunting, but very invigorating as well, because we will be putting something on the market that no one has ever seen before, because there hasn't been a Waterford whiskey from Waterford Distillery here. So it's a bit like Willy Wonka's in the chocolate factory. You can basically choose any ingredients you want and put them together, and hopefully people will enjoy it. And I was asked recently a strange question about what legacy you would like. And the simple answer is, when someone opens a bottle of whiskey, I want them to smile on the nose and on the taste and just enjoy it. And that's the simple thing. That's what we're trying to get. That sounds like a utopia, but we have the combinations here to try and make some people enjoy that. And again, not everyone will enjoy it. It won't be for everyone. It'll be too complicated for people. Mm-hmm. But the wine people, I think, will definitely get it because of the vintage and the way we're doing it. It's a bit like Krug Champagne and that as well. And a lot of people will want to try it because it's so different in whiskey terms.
Thank you so much, Ned. It was absolutely great to taste some of the Waterford product with you, as up until this point, we'd only been speaking in abstract terms. I think this episode gives an excellent insight into the various colours and flavours that are at your disposal to make the final Waterford blend. Do, of course, see below for Waterford Distillery website and main social media handles. If you're loving the Waterford series so far, do please give me a rating wherever you're listening. And if you're enjoying the content and you're not already subscribed, then do please head to interpretingwine.com/listen to put that right. And as ever, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. Next time on the series, in episode 378, we step away from production and we talk how to communicate all of the processes happening at Waterford with Head of Communications, Mark Newton. See you then.